Hello, I'm B'nai Naudin, and this is The Process. As a kid, my friends Sandy, Val, and John, who were also my neighbors, and I would play in this area in back of our apartment blocks called the Piney Woods. We also explored the woods down the hill, which led to a place called Sullivan's Pond. This was sort of our backyard, and we often ran around that area and all over the apartment area as well. One winter day, John, Sandy, and Val and their parents went out, and I joined them. It was a snowy day, and we walked towards Sullivan's Pond. It was such an amazing experience. The snow was thick and fluffy, and, you know, there were icicles, and it was just magical. And I just remember that so well. And I've recently talked to all the members of the family, and they, too, remember that particular day as being a magical experience. And I think that's when I really started to love the woods and spend time in them. But it wasn't until much, much later that I started hiking. You know, I don't think we even talked about hiking when we were kids, that we were just fooling around, running around in the woods. You know, we weren't going on any explorations or anything. But now I do hike. And one of the blessings of living in this area is that there's just a vast abundance of trails that you can hike on. One of the organizations that manages a lot of the trails is called the Joshua's Trust. Well, that's their nickname. And they oversee many properties in the northeastern part of the state of Connecticut, but also further south into New London County. My guest on this episode is Andy Woodcock. Andy has worked as a newspaper reporter and also in the U.S. Congress and the Connecticut General Assembly. He grew up in Bangor, Maine, and around Bar Harbor. His love of nature and forests was cemented at the age of 25 when he climbed Mount Katahdin. He told me that when he moved to Willimantic over 30 years ago, he started hiking a lot of the parks and lands in the area. He got involved in the trust in 2016 when he was hired as the part-time volunteer coordinator. In his own words, he loves, loves, loves the forest and all it offers. I wanted to talk to Andy because of his involvement with Joshua's Trust, which manages so many of the properties that I hike, and he agreed to talk with me. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Andy Woodcock. Here goes nothing. I'm with Andy Woodcock, who is the volunteer coordinator of the Joshua's Tract Conservation and Historic Trust. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Andy, tell us a little bit about the history of the trust. You know, how did it come together?
It's an interesting history. We came together with some concerned citizens from Mansfield who had their eye on the Gurleyville gristmill, which had been unoccupied for somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 years. They were concerned that it needed repairs, that it needed help, and it was a beautiful building on the Fenton River. They joined together as members of the Historic Commission and the Conservation Commission and formed a trust so that they could possibly take control of the building and open it up to the public and maintain it as a unique and interesting historical building for Mansfield. The original people were from Mansfield, and they were excited about this new project. The grist mill was owned by a man who wasn't ready to relinquish control over it. So the trust busied itself. This was back in 1966. They busied themselves looking at other lands and other projects, and they acquired quite a few over the years. But it wasn't until 1975 that we were able to negotiate a transfer of the gristmill, and we've owned it since.
I have a question about the gristmill. There's a very lovely house next to it, a white house.
That's right.
And is that linked to the mill in any way? Did the Milner ever live there?
He
or
did.
Anything? Miller, not a Milner. Milner is
Miller,
not for hats.
Yeah, we call it the Miller's Cottage.
The Miller's Cottage. Okay, can you tell me a little bit about that property?
Well, it's fascinating, really, because it was connected to the mill. The mill owner lived there. And the mill was very successful in grinding grist for corn and meal and all sorts of other things for the local population. But as the years continued, it became more noted for having been the home of Wilbur Cross, who was, the highway is named for Wilbur Cross. He was a governor of Connecticut. He was a president of Yale. He was a mover and shaker in Connecticut and one of the most, still to this day, probably loved governors of the state. He was an all-around great guy. And we have his cottage, which is kind of fun. It shows that people from humble origins, it's not a big cottage, can succeed in Connecticut. It's wonderful to be able to say that.
Can you remind us of the dates and a general time of that?
It's early in the 20th century.
Okay. So, and the gristmill itself is quite a bit older than that, is it not?
Yes. The gristmill was built in sometime around 1830, but there has been a mill on that site since pre-revolutionary days. I believe the first one was built sometime around 1720. So, long time. And the mill has gone into various iterations and had a sawmill attached to it, had a bunch of different things. It was also primarily a gristmill.
So that was the property that sparked the interest in preservation.
Right.
And that was in 1966 that this happened?
That was
happened?
Our founding. That's right. Mm-hmm.
So how many members founded the trust, or how many people founded the trust, and do you know anything about the whole process of having done that?
Well, I know about some of the people. I don't know how many were involved initially, but it was a fairly significant number. They drew from the local population, which included at that time a lot of people from Yukon, professional people, doctors, lawyers, and that's pretty much who we have today. But the people have expanded into all kinds of different fields and that sort of thing. We have carpenters, we have people who work on roads, we have all kinds of different people that are interested in conservation now, which is very exciting. But the people who started it were ambitious for the trust, and they worked very hard. And one, particularly Sam Dodd, was one of these guys who just shook everybody's hand, went out into the neighborhoods, talked to people, and he's responsible for the Blue Trail that goes up to Massachusetts. His connection to Joshua's Trust is a connection to a very popular Nipmuc Trail.
And what was the original mission, or what is the mission of the trust?
The trust is almost strictly an idea to conserve land. We have the historical quality, and we have two major properties that have historical buildings on them, including an intact farm where our offices are, the Atwood Farm. And but most of our property, the 4,500 acres that we oversee or own, are preserved because of the conservation effort that we're trying to do.
And how many towns, in how many towns are these properties?
14 towns in three counties.
So Windham County is one?
Windham County, Tolland County, and New London County.
Aha. Uh-huh. So which properties are in New London County? That's further afield.
It is a little further afield. But when you think about New London County, it actually comes right up to the border of Windham.
I see.
So Lebanon and Franklin are both in New London County. So we have a pretty good range of properties. They're all gorgeous. Well, most of them are gorgeous.
Does the trust partner with other organizations or entities, maybe like the Forestry Department at UConn or...
Yes, we have quite a few. We have a good relationship with UConn. We're very excited by UConn being here and Eastern Connecticut State University, for that matter. Both universities are very interested in what we're doing. The Forestry Department and Joshua's Trust have worked in cooperation for several years now. We have graduate students who are attracted to what we're doing. We have professors who are attracted to what we're doing. They are sometimes working with their department, sometimes working independently and just volunteering like anybody else. But we also have corporate sponsors from the community and farther afield. We are very, very lucky to have the people in this area that are really committed to this kind of organization.
And your collaboration with UConn and Eastern, you say some of the students and professors are involved. How are they involved? What kinds of things are they doing?
For the most part, they are involved in events and in the now weekly trips out into the properties for trail maintenance and property maintenance. We've gotten fraternities interested. We've gotten some of the sports teams interested. UConn has sports clubs that are interested in coming out. The rugby team, the figure skating team, they've all been out. It's really interesting. It's kind of an eye-opener to know how many organizations UConn and Eastern have within their under their roof. It's just extraordinary. And they come out from the woodwork and come out to Joshua's Trust. It's fascinating because we have a property that's very close to UConn campus, Wetton Woods, and it's 30 acres of land. And I say to some of the students that sometimes, you know, being at UConn can kind of close in on you. You can feel like the buildings are too tall, the wind is too strong, the... you know, you just need a break, and it's right there. I call it UConn Central Park.
And what kind of work do they do, these groups of students?
You know, it's amazing. They come out in big numbers. We get 20 at a time sometimes, and that's extremely exciting. They intermingle with our own Joshua's Trust volunteers, and that's a lot of fun to get the community involved in the campus.
What kind of activities do you actually do in the maintenance aspect of the...
We go after invasive species. We're trying to control them. It's a work in progress. We don't know whether we can ever control them. They're extremely dense growth patterns. But we're doing sort of the fight against the impossible in a certain sense. But it cleans things up. It allows the native growth to emerge. It also keeps ticks under control. And that's one of the things we're really interested in trying to do. The farther we get thick growth away from some of the trails, the less likely visitors will get ticks. But mm-hmm. we also teach tick prevention, tick control on your own body, and mm-hmm. how to manage that.
And I believe you also build bridges or do bars. I don't know whether I call them.
Water bars.
Water bars.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's interesting. As you build a trail through a property, you may run into areas where runoff is occurring. We like to try to maintain the natural direction of runoff. A trail can interrupt that. So what we do is we put a bar of wood across the trail that will redirect the runoff to go in a more natural place, and so the erosion possibilities are reduced as much as possible. And that runs down into the streams that run through all the properties. So the water bars are really essential to the maintaining of the land. And we have to look at them. They can wear out. We change them up. We put them in places where new runoff is happening, which is something that's been going on for a couple of years now. And Yeah, that's pretty much what the water bros do.
And you say you have weekly maintenance, so
we do.
So how?
That's
how
new.
So, yes, how does that work? That's regular. That's really regular. So what's happening now in the wintertime?
We're really excited about that. We're starting every Saturday, 10 to noon, trips into the properties. The properties all need attention. They need constant maintenance. It just works better that way. And now, thanks to the young people who are coming and getting attracted to our properties, we're able to do that. We have the equipment. We supply the equipment to do it. We have gloves. We have all the sorts of things that people don't generally have at their home. So we're able to take on high numbers of people. I'm very excited about it. And we're going to post them on our website so everybody can access where they are. We'll have directions. We'll have a brief summary of what the work is going to be. And people can pick and choose which ones they go to.
Can you tell us the name of your website?
It's joshuastrust.org.
Okay, that's easy enough.
Yeah.
All right, so how does the trust acquire lands?
A couple of different ways. We acquire lands through reputation. People who are interested and own land have donated land to us. We have also purchased land. We have worked with people who own land to bequeath land to us. And we have also gone into easements, which the property owner maintains ownership of the property, and they agree to maintain it in a conservation restricted sort of use way.
So they don't develop it or they just leave it alone?
Yeah, pretty much. There are some allowances for, you know, things that they need to do. If they need to build a barn, they need to do things like that. That is incorporated into the agreement.
And how many properties do you have at this time?
Ooh, we have 35 properties with trails. We have, I don't know how many easements we have. And we have a total of 70 fully owned properties.
Wow, that's a lot of properties all through those counties.
It's a huge responsibility.
Uh-huh.
We have a base group of people who steward the land. We have about 80 volunteers who do that. So that's a lot of people.
And so they're attached to a particular property, correct?
Yes, for the most part. We also have some who oversee several properties in cooperation with the stewards, and they're called regional coordinators. And that way we can figure out exactly what properties need attention, which ones need more attention than another. And so we can devise a pecking order for the best use of the properties.
So you have these weekly, now you're starting with this weekly maintenance. What kind of stuff is happening in the summertime when things are sort of grown in, and what kind of work do you do then?
One of the interesting things we've been able to do is we've been working with a group from EastCon, which is not affiliated with the university, either university. It's a public-private organization that offers all kinds of different support for public schools and for non-traditional students and for driving courses. It's an organization that has amazing numbers of tentacles. One of the programs that they have is a summer job program for young people, high school age kids. And we have been working with them. They've been coming to our properties, among other things that they do during the summer. We've been very lucky to have them interested in our work. We've had them build bridges. We've had them build boardwalks. We've had them work with water bars, which we were just talking about. They're terrific kids, and they can come in during the week because they're summer jobs associated with them. They're doing it for our purposes. They're doing it on a volunteer basis, but they're paid by EastCon.
Okay, so they're paid to help you.
Right.
And how many kids do you have every summer?
It varies. We've done it for 3 summers in a row, and we've had, last summer we had 6 or 8 kids. We had a supervisor from EastCon. We had our stewards working with them. We had carpenters working with them. We think that what we offer them is they like it because the kids are learning something useful outside of their job. They're learning a skill. They're also learning a little bit about conservation. They're learning a little bit about what it's like to be in the woods. Most of them are boys, and we all know that boys want to be doing things. They're not always great in the classroom setting, but they want to get out and play sports and learn carpentry and do a lot of different things. So it's really interesting to have them come along.
And are there other types of activities that you organize, either sort of to promote the trust, or is there like a yearly thing that you do, a gathering?
We do a lot of that sort of stuff. You anticipate that really well. We do have an annual meeting. We have an open house day. We have a lecture series that's going on now about climate change. Last Sunday, we had a lecture on local effects of climate change, and we're going to have another one on legislation in the Connecticut General Assembly that's coming up, and then we're going to have an interactive, it isn't really a lecture, but it's a hands-on type thing with younger people. So those things are pretty exciting. Those are also pretty new for us, so we are sponsoring that, co-sponsoring it. And that's an exciting thing. We also have walks through our property where people will, we have people who are knowledgeable about plants and knowledgeable about birds, knowledgeable about bats to have walks through our properties. And they're very well attended by folks from the community and from outside.
So how often do you do these walks, and do you you promote them through your website? How does that work?
We do promote them through the website. We don't do them as much in the winter, but it's not impossible to do them during the winter. That's a nice time to do some stargazing and things like that.
Oh, so you do night?
We do.
You do night walks?
We do.
Okay.
And the bat walks, of course, take place at night.
Oh, okay.
So that's.
And how frequent are the bat walks?
We have one coming up in August, I believe. Yeah, it's August 14th. And that's sort of an annual thing. We've done it twice in a year, but I think this year it's only one is scheduled so far. If it becomes popular, we may do another one.
Okay, so you have. And do you do moonlight, sort of like full moon walks and things like that?
We have. I don't see. I've got my schedule in front of me, and I don't see one for a moonlight walk on there right now.
Uh-huh.
But anything can happen. These things are evolving, and it's we're always open to new schedules.
Okay. And so you said that you're doing a lecture series. Is the plan to kind of do that once a year, some kind of theme? And
we hope so. Yeah, that's kind of the target for it. And, you know, that's something that's going to we'll see how it works this time. We'll look at what mistakes we made, what we need to improve, what we need to do, and it'll be revisited next year, I'm sure.
Now, these decisions about what kind of programming you do, do these happen during the annual meeting, or do you have regular meetings? How many people are involved in these meetings?
We have a board of trustees, and those meetings take place every other month. We have an executive committee, and those meetings take place every other month on the opposite months. So we have a meeting of overseers every month. They're just different overseers. And they pretty much set the agenda for what we're doing, what properties we're acquiring, all the things that happen in our day-to-day and long-term operations comes through them.
Mm-hmm.
We also have three part-time staff members and one full-time staff member and the executive director. I am one of the part-time staff members.
And as volunteer coordinator, you're constantly on the lookout for volunteers.
Yes, new volunteers.
Uh-huh. And how can people get involved? How can they volunteer? Are there different ways to contact you?
Absolutely. There's almost 6 ways to Sunday. We get a lot of attention through the website, joshuastrust.org, and people can contact me, Andy Woodcock, through the volunteer coordinating tab. And there's a form to fill out. You send it to me. I get in touch with you. We can put you on a parcel within a week, generally speaking. And I'm really excited that we're able to be able to bring people in so quickly. If you want to wait, you can pick and choose whatever weekend you participate in. You can just come to a weekend. You don't have to go through the website. Look at the website, look at what's coming up, come to the weekend, introduce yourself.
So on the weekend, you announce where things are taking place, or is it always starting out at your home base?
We meet at the parcel.
At the specific location you're going to be working
yes,
at?
Yes, uh-huh. That's right. It seems to work best that way. People can get there under their own steam, and it's just an easier way to do everything.
And remind us, it's 2 hours? Is that what it is? Three hours?
Yeah, it's generally 10 o'clock a.m. to 12 p.m., so it's 10 to noon.
Okay. Joshua.
Yeah.
Joshua of Joshua's Trust. So who was Joshua?
Joshua was the son of Uncas, who was a pre-revolutionary colonial days leader of the Mohegan tribe. Joshua inherited that role and was the leader of the tribe after Uncas passed on. And he was in negotiations with several colonialists, white settlers, from Norwich. He transferred the land, a significant amount of the land, to those colonialists. And the founders of Joshua's Trust decided to bring sort of a preservation idea to the lands that were once held by the Mohegans. And naming it after Joshua was a nod to and an attempt to honor Joshua.
Okay. Do you have anything that you want to say to people who are listening to this
sure.
show?
Sure. We'd love to have you join us. We'd love to have you do whatever skills you can bring. If you don't feel like you have any skills, but you're still interested, you'll learn on the fly. A lot of people come in and have never used a lopper,
don't even know what it is,
or don't know what a lopper is.
Yeah,
that's something you can learn. It's a lot of fun. We have a really good time. People are very enthusiastic. They're glad to meet other new people. It works really well. The object of this stuff is actually to have fun.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you coming in and talking with me. And if you're interested in participating, you can go to joshuastrust.org to find out more. Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed learning more about Joshua's Trust, and that you are inspired to seek out some of their trails, or maybe to volunteer. I'd like to thank WHUS Stores for making this podcast possible, and the students who continue to shepherd me through the process. Next time on The Process, I'll have a surprise guest, so stay tuned.